We are supposed to talk about the parasha today. Our parasha is Parashat Noach. And when we view the parasha of Noach, so we have to first remind ourselves that, what are we reading here? Chamish Chumshei Torah. Five books of the Torah. Okay, so what is the Torah? Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the Jewish people. What year was that from creation? What year was Avram born?
1948.
Very good. And when Avram is 100 years old, he has a son, and he's told that son, right, so that's 2048. And that son, Yitzchak, is the beginning of the exile, which will last 400 years. So 2048 plus 400. 1948 Avram is born. No, we're not going BCE. We're going by the Jewish calendar. 1948 from the time of creation. 1,948 years from creation. So 1,948 years after creation, Avram comes onto the scene. In a minute, let's just finish this thought. 100 years later, he has the vision in which he has the sun, from which we start the countdown of 400 years till the Exodus coming out of Egypt. So 2448 is the year we come out of Mitzrayim. And that year we stand at the foot of Sinai. God tells Moshe in the Parsha of Mishpatim, Ale Eilai Hahara, come up the mountaintop to me. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up for 40 days and 40 nights. Does something that's completely inhuman, to go up to heaven and to not to eat, not to drink for 40 days and 40 nights. And he is given what? God tells him, I will give you Vetnelcha et Torah, the written law, the Torah. V'aluchot, he's given the two tablets, Ten Commandments. V'amitzvah, the oral law of Mishnah. Asher katavti, that's all the concepts that were in the later prophets. Lo'otam is the Talmud. So all of the written law and oral law are given over to Moshe. Now, you read the Torah, and the Torah takes us through a span of 40 years or 39 years after Moshe Rabbeinu's time. So was all of that written? That deserves its own discussion. How exactly was the Torah given? But the Torah was given as a written law and an oral law. If we didn't have the oral law, we could never figure out what the Torah is talking about. One of the things that Moshe did was he told the people, you know, there are 70 nations around, the Egyptians, the Philistines, not to be confused with Palestinians. They chose that name. Palestinians have nothing to do with ancient Philistines. You have the Philistines, you have the Babylonians, the Syrians. Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, I'll tell you the lineage of each nation. In our parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu recounts in the Torah recounts the history of the 70 major nations of the world. And that was one of the things that Moshe Rabbeinu, one of the signs he gave the Jewish people. No one else could recount the history of every nation. Mitzrayim. Where does the name Mitzrayim come from? Who knows? Mitzrayim is a person. There was a person named Mitzrayim who fathered the beginning of the Egyptian people. In our parsha, we go back to his lineage and we are told Noah had a son named Ham. Ham had a son named Mitzrayim. So the first person named Mitzrayim was Noah's grandson. Our parsha, the end of our parsha. One of the things Moshe did was he told the Jewish people the world history. Now Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't telling them something they didn't really know. Because if we do simple calculation, we sit down with the Torah and we read the genealogy. Adam Arishon, Adam, how long did he live? 930 years. What's an easy way to remember that? Right. Why do we do 1,000 minus 70? Very good. Right. God tells Adam, "Biyom acholcham imenu motamut, the day you eat from the forbidden fruit, you will die." Adam eats from the forbidden fruit, he doesn't drop dead. What happens? So King David tells us in Psalms. We say it every Shabbos. Ki elef shanim, 1,000 years by you, Hashem, are ki yom etmol, like yesterday. Right? You guys know the joke about that, right? The guy standing there praying, he says, God, how much is $1,000,000 by you? So God says, a penny. So the guy says, well, God, how much is 1,000 years by you? God says, a second. So the guy says, well, God, do me a favor, could you just lend me a penny? So God says, just a second. With me? Hello? Okay. So God, in Psalms it says that by God, 1,000 years is a day. That's why we say the 6 days of creation correspond to 6,000 years of the world. Every day of creation corresponds to a millennium. And what's the date today? How many years since creation? 5,769. We switched, right? After Rosh Hashanah, it became 69. So 5,769 years ago, there was creation. And
wasn't it actually before then?
How so?
Because it wasn't just when Judaism started.
Nope.
So how would they know to like count?
Good question. We'll get to that. What? So, you guys are taking me back to Bereshis. We didn't have class last week, but we'll sneak back to Bereshis for a second. When God created man, how old was man? Did God create a mature man or a baby man?
Mature.
When God created the world, did he create a mature world or a baby world?
Mature.
We derive it. It's already a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Long before Darwin came along, the Gemara stated, you can open up a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. The Babylonian Talmud was composed how many years ago? The Talmud, the Gemara was composed approximately 70, what? Approximately what year AD or Common Era? 70 CE is when the temple was destroyed, which is when we have the Tanakh period, the period of the Mishnah. And if we move forward approximately 200 years, so we have the period of the Talmud. So if we're talking about approximately 200 Common Era, how many years ago was the Babylonian Talmud composed? Approximately 1,800, 1,700 years ago. So almost two millennium ago, the rabbi said that when the world was created, the world was not created a baby world. God created every animal as a mature animal. God created Adam Arishon, as a mature Adam. And when we look at the earth, it's very possible that God created a mature earth with fossil fuels and all other things built into the earth so that we could derive the benefit from that. We're always assuming that God created a baby world. Well, nothing else that God created was baby. Even Noah, when he takes the animals into the ark, what does it say? He took husband and wife, right? Why does the pasuk have to tell us they're husband and wives? To tell us that the wives were pregnant. You know, some animals take 3 years, some animals take 5 years to give birth. God didn't want to wait after the flood for the world to fill up. So God said, take big animals, take mature animals, take pregnant animals, bring them into the ark. So let's go back to where we were in the beginning, right? In the beginning, 5,769 years ago, when God created the world. So we have Adam. Adam is a mature adult with understanding. And Adam sees that there's no one else around. And Adam and his wife have children. They have Cain, and his twin sister. They have Hevel, Abel, and his two twin sisters. And then Cain is jealous of Abel for having two twin sisters. So he gets up and kills Hevel. And Adam is witness to the next 970 years of his life. He sees that there are no other human beings around. Now God has spoken to him, and he sees that I'm the only one around. And everyone that's around it, they're all my children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-great-grandchildren. And he's telling this to the people. You know, God created me, and there was no one else around. You're all from me. Ask your parents. They're my great-great-grandchildren. Ask your grandparents. And Noah, in our parasha, 10 generations later, sees his great-great-great-great-grandfather, Adam. Why is it? Did you ever wonder that the generations from Adam to Noah lived such long lives, hundreds of years, and we don't live that way anymore today? Even in the time of the Torah, they didn't live. So, one understanding is that we were punished, but you have to know that whenever the Torah tells us subnatural, supernatural phenomenons, there always has to be a natural explanation. When God makes miracles, He makes them in a way that's within the forces of nature. When God brought a flood, so the Talmud said, how does God bring a flood? He made something change in the cosmos. The Gemara discusses which stars God shifted around in order to make there be a flood down here on earth. Why does the Gemara have to go into which stars God shifted around? So it has halachic relevance, but it's also philosophical relevance. That when we discuss miracles, the essence of a miracle is when it happens, how it happens. But if you think about the fact that the tides change, we see that the stars have an effect on the tides, right? High tide, low tide, depending on where the moon and the sun is, right? You guys are just out of high school, you should still remember this. I mean, it's been a few years, but you guys just learned this, no? The tides are affected by this constellations. It's very possible that there was some kind of shooting star or something else, some natural phenomenon that caused the splitting of the sea. The miracle of the splitting was the fact that God said, tomorrow morning, you guys will cross, and there'll be just enough time for the Jews to get out and the Egyptians to be sunk. There were many miracles about it, but there always has to be some kind of rational ability to understand the miracles. We'll discuss that at greater length at a different time, but that's in general, that's a concept that makes sense, because otherwise we'd have no free will. If you just saw something that there was no natural way to explain, then what did Spinoza say? You guys didn't study Spinoza, right? Okay, good for you. What's Spinoza say? Everyone focuses on the verse that says the sea was split, and no one notices the verse that says that all night long God made winds go over the sea. It says that in the Pasuk. So we don't need Spinoza. Just open up the Chumash. That's what it says. Vayaver Hashem ruach kadim azim aza kol alayla. Right? That's what it says. All night long God made massive winds over the sea. Why do you need massive winds if it's just this phenomenon? Boom, miracle. Sea is split. What do you need winds for? Right? So, in general, there is a natural explanation. But Adam, going back, let's go back 5,769 years, Adam tells his children, it's been only me, 10 generations later, Noach is around, Noach sees Adam. If you do the math, you figure out the years, you see that Noach met Adam, and the world has become totally corrupt morally. People are stealing one another's objects, stealing one another's wives. People who are supposed to be the legal authority are using their positions of power to steal from one another. And God says, this is terrible. This isn't what I wanted. So God sends who? Who does God send? Mesushelach. Mesushelach was a prophet that came along and said, guys, this is wrong. You guys, you have to repent. There's a way that God wants you to live. God gives you 7 basic laws of morality. It doesn't work.
This is before we even got the Torah, obviously.
Long before the Torah. And God sends a warning sign. There's a massive tsunami and 1/3 of world population is flattened. It doesn't say this in the Torah. This is what we have on tradition.
So that means you would have killed Noah. Sorry, that means you would have killed Adam.
We don't know who was the third of the world that was wiped out, but we know that there was a massive flood or tsunami. Some kind of great wave, we have on tradition, came on the dry land and wiped out 1/3 of human population at that time. Medrash, yeah. Well, that deserves a longer discussion into the what is the role of a prophet and why God chooses so-and-so to do such and such. It's a longer discussion. It's a good question.
Why didn't God just create Adam as a Jew?
It's also a good question.
Why did he have to wait so long to create the first Jew?
Oh, so we're headed in that direction. But let me ask you a question while we head there. Why is a human being born where he cannot take care of himself? Why do we have on tradition that every baby in his mother's womb learns all of the Torah, and yet when he comes out he gets a smack, forgets it all? What do you have to learn it for? Why did Adam have to start in the Garden of Eden if he was going to end up out of the Garden of Eden? And why is it that every other animal can take care of themselves, they can stand on their feet minutes, hours after they're born, and the human being has to spend so many years developing before he can actually talk or eat or take care of himself? So, few questions to think about, and then let's go back to your question, but we'll get there. We're on our way to that. So Noach meets Adam, right? Noach knows his great-great-grandfather Adam, and he knows that God created Adam and that there are no other human beings on this planet other than those that Adam bore as far as they can see. And Adam tells him, God spoke to me. The world is destroyed, and Noach comes out of the ark. Did you ever wonder how big this ark was?
Huge.
Yeah, we were small. 3 levels high, kilometers.
So yeah, the Torah tells us the measurements. But you take the measurements of the Torah, and you go to the Bronx Zoo, you go to Australia. It's not that big. I mean, we could look at the measurements, but it's irrelevant because it was relatively small. You could figure it's, let's make it this block long. Now think about just all the birds he has to fit into there. All the different species of birds, all different species of animals. So naturally, it doesn't work. You do the math, there's no way it worked. Just to fit in between the different species of rhinoceri and elephants. Just start thinking about the large animals, it doesn't work. You look at the dimensions and then think about food for all of them and food for himself. Okay, fine. Let's say 2 of each. Yeah, but we say he needed the different species. And even 2 of each ain't going to work. You do the dimensions. Right. Oh, so there is a discussion exactly where the flood took place. But simple understanding is that the flood was all of planet Earth. That's a simple understanding. We'll stick to that right now. Not by the flood. Before the flood, God sent the warning. He sent the prophet, and he also sent a warning. A miniature flood. A tsunami came along. A huge wave wiped out a third of the planet. Then, the people didn't learn their lessons, so God sent the flood. The Mabul. Yes, Eli.
I find it hard to just comprehend if the tree people or animals from all around the world.
He didn't. It says in the verse, this, you don't need our tradition. It says that Ba'u el Noach, the animals of their own volition, God sent them to Noach. They came. It doesn't say he brought them. He couldn't have brought them.
So they just
God sent them along, right. Right. There's no way he could have done it. No. Impossible. What?
There's no mention of fish.
Correct? Because the pasuk says, Mikol asher becharava meitu, all those that were on dry land died. The fish, the pasuk clearly indicates, did not get wiped out by the flood. That's a separate discussion. It's a good question. guys, we can't cover the whole Torah in one day. We're getting there. Okay, so Noach meets Adam, and Noach knows what Adam told him. God created him and told him about creation, and God had him name all of the different creatures. And now the whole world is flooded, and Noach comes out of the ark, and he tells his children what he knows. And if you think about it, if the ark really couldn't contain these animals in any natural way, so then why is God telling him the dimensions? Let him build it. Excellent. So now we're going to go the route you're saying, but we'll mention a principle. Whenever we're discussing something spiritual in physical terms, you take a temple. What does God need a temple for? God is omnipresent, right? God is all over. He needs a temple. God tells us build it this way or build it that way. We look at it, and that seems very strange, right? That seems almost pagan. What do we need to build the temple, and what do we need the temple to be this way? Let us just pray at home. Let's do what we have to do. What's the idea? So whenever you're approaching something spiritual that seems to take on physical terms, like the ark or like the temple, where God tells us exact measurements, so that's where we approach the secrets of the Torah. That numbers have representation beyond the surface, that the concepts are deeper than what the naked eye sees. We could discuss examples, but I'm not sure it's worth taking the time for it. Let's leave it for now. You guys know, this isn't new to you, what I'm saying now, right? Okay, so we have to say the same thing about the ark, about the teva. That when God gave the measurements, there were spiritual reasons for those measurements. It has nothing to do with the physical size. Because the physical size, whatever size he was going to be able to build in the 120 years he spent building it, there was no way one man, even with the help of his three children, is going to build a zoo big enough to contain all the animals of the world. It's just not going to happen. So whatever it's going to be, it's going to be a miracle. So if God's telling the measurements, there has to be a spiritual reason for the measurements. Yes? First of all, the verse tells us, I'm answering your second question first. En tzadik ba'al tashay aseh tov v'lo yechta. There's no such thing as a righteous person who doesn't sin. Every person sins. God created the world, and we're jumping ahead of ourselves. But our tradition has it that when God created the world, God created rough drafts. Now, God doesn't need rough drafts. He knows what the bottom line is going to be. But God created rough drafts to teach us something. The concept that God created rough drafts is in order to teach us something. Even the concept that God brings a flood, and the verse says, God says, gee, I see how they've all sinned. I regret what I've done. That's God talking to us in our language. God knew in advance the way it would be. The dimension of time, you guys know there's dimension, and one of the dimensions is time, right? So that's a limitation that God put upon us. God's not limited by that. God doesn't live in a specific moment, if we could call God's life living. God is omnipresent throughout time as well. So God, it's not that God didn't know where we'd end up, but there's a message in it for us in the concept of the flood. But here we're touching on many, many topics, the whole concept of Bechira Chofshit, free will, etc. But let's go back to what you brought up.
You don't get
people to fall. Oh, so I'll answer you a very sad answer, but first, let's just answer your second question first. Adam sinned. Our sages tell us that there were 10 worlds that were created. This is the final draft, but there were rough drafts. Some commentaries want to say that God didn't completely abolish the rough drafts, and that's why we have dinosaurs and stuff like that, because there's still stuff left over. When we say the world was created 5,769 years ago, that's this world. But there were rough drafts. Now, why do we need these rough drafts? Because our sages say that these rough drafts didn't work, and there was a message in it for us. These rough drafts went with din. God said, I'm going with the letter of the law. I have my expectations. You live up to it. Good. If not, damn, you're finished. God comes to create this world. He calls in the angels and says, should I create the world? And the angels say, no, man's going to sin. What's the point? Bam, God destroys those angels. So what was the purpose? God knew they would answer that. The purpose is the message for us. The message is God says, I knew you wouldn't live up to what you're supposed to do. Life is a series of trial and error. We try, we err, we get back up. How does David HaMelech, how does he classify? We'll get to the name in a second. But the idea that Adam sinned, that just shows he's human. Every human being sins. We all try to do our best, and sometimes we fall, and we have to get back up. Sheva yipol tzadik lakam. The pasuk says a tzaddik is one who falls 7 times and keeps getting up. A tzaddik isn't someone who doesn't fall. A tzaddik is someone who keeps getting up from falling. So the fact that Adam sinned, yeah, we all sin. That doesn't mean he's a bad person. The fact that people name their children Adam is very, very sad. You know why people name their children Adam? Because people, on the one hand, there's a good side to it. People want a name after a name in the Bible. But on the other hand, they don't remember so many names from the Bible. And very often people will open a Bible and just start looking. And the first name they hit is Adam. So I said, gee, that's a nice name. What? I honestly think that's the reason. I think that's the name that people are most familiar with. Adam. Yeah.
Jewish people.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you that if you look in more learned circles, you won't find Adam such a common name. In more learned circles, if you go to more learned circles, you'll find the name Moshe is more common, Yehuda is more common. Many names are more common than Adam. It's only when you start going to circles where people don't know that much. What? Okay. Yeah, but look, I'm telling you, look out of one circle, look into other circles and see if it's such a common name. I don't remember. I was in yeshiva with 500-600 people. I don't remember one guy named Adam. I could tell you many named Avram, Moshe, in the diaspora as well. I attended quite a few yeshivas. It depends which population, how learned they are. That's what I think. It's my own theory, but I think it holds true. If you look, I think that's what you'll find, unfortunately. Okay, let's continue. So Noach, we have 10 generations till whom? Till Avram. Avram saw Noach. So Avram saw Noach who saw Adam. And Avram knows that Noach told him, eyewitness account, I saw the world. Nothing here. Everything is destroyed. I saw Adam and Adam told me God created him. And I'm telling you, there is a God, he created the world. And in Avram's time, we start seeing the spread of paganism. But that's next week's parsha. We'll have to discuss Avram and how he contended with the beliefs of his time, either at the end of today's class or next week. We'll see if we get there. Our focus today is on Noah. And what we see in our parsha, we see that mankind was going downhill. That's our tendency. If left to his own whims, man destroys one another. What does the Mishnah and Avot say? We should always value the authority, because if not for the authority, what would we do? What does the Mishnah say? Does anyone remember? Ish et re'eu. Ish, what does Ish mean? Man. Ish means important man. Even the people of importance, et re'eu, what is re'eu, his friend? Chayim belau, would swallow his friend alive. If not for the fear of the authorities, we'd be swallowing one another alive. Even the important ones of us. That's the nature of man. That's the nature of the beast. God gave us a Torah. But you see that from the beginning of creation to Noah, where God just gave him the 7 Noahide laws, mankind was going downhill. And it reached a point where God said, there's no point. We've got to start from scratch. So everything is destroyed. We see from here two basic points, two basics of Jewish philosophy. A, God is watching over what's going on down here. And B, there is a point where God punishes. It's not right away when we do something right or wrong, but we do hit a point where God says enough is enough. Just one second. Did you guys have billboards in Australia and New Zealand, right? You ever see a guy painting a billboard? Stands there with this on this huge scaffold. He's got a sketch in his hand. And you see him starting to draw a box. He's drawing that box all black. And you see him look at the sketch in his hand. And then he draws around there something blue. And you're looking at him. You don't see the picture. What's he drawing? You come back half a day later, you start seeing the picture. That little box that he drew to be black, that was the pupil of an eye. And what he drew around over there, just, you know how they do it. They have these, on the billboard, there are big boxes and little boxes and even smaller boxes. And he has on his chart, on his sketch, he doesn't know how to paint. He doesn't know what he's doing specifically. He just has written, this number box, you fill in this color. This size box next to it, you follow, yeah? That's how he draws the picture. When you look at the beginning of the day, you have no idea what he's drawing when he just draws that dot. You come back later, you start seeing more of the picture. You come back at the end of the day, oh, you see the whole picture. Now you understand what he was drawing. That's the concept we discussed last time. When we stand in one moment of time and we see things around us happening, we can't understand them. Why is this happening this way? Why is that happening that way? Very often we feel like saying, hey, God, listen up. Let me tell you how it should be. Very often if we feel like, God, if you only would listen to me, I could tell you how things should work right now. Why don't you make zebras with shorter necks? Trees won't have to be so high. Everything, it'll be more comfortable for us to pick the fruits. We have a whole plan if you only ask us how the world should look. At any given moment, we have suggestions. If only God would listen, we have thoughts on how things should maybe be different. On the one hand, as we discussed last time, our responsibility is to pray. We say, God, do it, help us out. On the other hand, when we see things going different than the way we'd like to see them, we have to remember all we're seeing is that dot. There is the greater sketch around it, and when at the end we get to look at the whole picture, then we'll say, ah, now I understand why this had to be this way, and that had to be that way. There's a story, you guys know about the footsteps in the beach? This isn't a Jewish story, but it's a nice story anyways. You guys know the guy comes up to heaven, and God shows him footprints in the sand. So he sees two footprints going along the beach. So he says, God, what's that? So God tells him, that's your life. Look near the footprints. Each time you'll see an occurrence that happened at that time. So he says, and what are the two footprints? So he says, one is yours and one is mine. I've walked with you throughout life. And the guy says, gee, God, you know, I see at all the difficult points in my life, there's only one footprint. Where were you then? So God says to the guy, that's my footprint near all the difficult occurrences. That's when I was holding you. You know, that's my footprint. It's not your footprint. So sometimes we look at things and we think, gee, wait a second, where's God? We have to remember, he's the one that's giving us the strength. He's giving us the breath every morning. Noah is standing in a situation where God has made him impotent. For 500 years, everyone around him is having children. And what does Noah have? He's childless. What could Noah think? Everyone else is being immoral, and I'm doing what's right. Everyone else is having kids, and I'm not. It must have been pretty tough. Think about 500 years. I don't understand what 500 years means, but 500 years is a long time. We know, you guys learn Rashi? Why didn't Noah have kids till age 500? No, that's not why. He tried. Rashi says the reason is because had he had children initially, they would have been old enough that when God judged the world over the flood, he would have judged them as well. And then they weren't as pious as Noah. They would have gotten killed. God didn't want Noah to lose his children to the flood. So God ensured that Noah would be childless for hundreds of years so that when the flood came, his children would still be legally minors and they wouldn't be held accountable for their own sins and they'd be saved. And now I'm anticipating the questions. Just remind me your names.
Yaron,
yeah.
I don't understand why we follow these people so much if they're not Jewish.
Okay.
Why do we follow Noah and Adam so much if they're not even Jewish?
Okay, so in 1 second we'll get back to that. Yeah. Oh, that's what I was waiting for. So that question, if we ever get to have a class on the book of Jonah, in the book of Jonah, God says, I will not destroy a city for the sake of the children. the children shouldn't be destroyed. And the question that's really begging over there is, wait a second, what about the flood? What about all other times that children get destroyed? So it's an excellent question, but it deserves its own class. So we can't do everything in one class. Maimonides asks your question, Yaron. Maimonides says, Rambam, why do we spend so much time discussing Adam and Noah? They're not even Jews. So the answer to that is what I began the class with. The answer is what I said in the beginning of the class is what the Rambam says. It's not my own thought. The Rambam says, the idea behind the Torah telling us the story of Adam and Noah is to tell us basic Jewish philosophy. A, God is watching over us. B, God punishes. C, there were very short, relatively, there was a short period of time between the time Moshe came along and said, God created the world, and the time Adam was around. Because if you do the math, Adam saw Noah, Noah saw Avram, and Avram saw Yaakov. Yaakov, his grandson, Avram Yitzchak Yaakov, probably saw his grandchildren, one of which was Moshe's mother, Yocheved. She was the daughter of Levi. She for sure, Yaakov saw her. So from Moshe to Adam is four generations, even though 2,448 years passed, right?
How many years were we saved?
We were 210. That's on tradition. Doesn't say it anywhere. Amram.
So
it's teaching us things. We're supposed to learn from it. Noach was not a Jew. When the Gemara discusses... Good question. Oh, wow, you guys are asking excellent questions. Does God watch over non-Jews? So, God watches over everyone. To what extent God watches over each person is dependent... There's God's knowledge and God's intervention. God knows what's happening by each person. The Medrash says, every blade of grass has an angel corresponding to it that keeps rooting it on and saying, grow, grow, grow. So what does every blade of grass need an angel for? That's a good question, right? What do they need angels for? So that deserves its own discussion, what the Medrash is trying to tell us. It's trying to tell us to value nature. It's telling us that if you're just walking by in the park and you feel like plucking at leaves, you're destroying something. God gave a gift to the world. God gave plants. What do we say in the blessing? Borei nefashot rabot, God creates many living organisms, v'chesronan, and everything they're lacking. Al kol ma shebara l'achayot v'em nefesh kochai, on top of which, all God created all the other things to give us life. What does that mean? That means God could have made the world that you wake up in the morning, you dig up some sand, you eat it, you take some water, you drink it, and you keep living. God could have made the world black and white, right? God didn't. God gave us the things we were lacking, the minimum. Beyond that, everything else that you need to live. God gave us amenities. The world isn't just about eating bread. The world is about eating bread with butter, bread with cream cheese, bread with all the things you might want. The world's about God gave us a beautiful world. What do we say? We say in benching. Oh, we'll get to that. Just a second. Okay, I suggest we pause for a minute and sing a song and then come back and then decide.